This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 9th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 185. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support The Breaker. On this edition, headlines from the Pacific Rim and the Pacific Northwest, the Is It Just Me commentary, I award a virtual Nanaimo bar to difference makers, and the Big Deal feature. Hear from Drs. Anthony Fauci, Mike Ryan, and Penny Ballum. All three were on the Genome BC virtual conference last week. Listen to the highlights from the White House epidemiologist, the World Health Organization's emergency response head, and the leader of BC's coronavirus immunization program. But first, is it just me? Is it just me, or should the Trudeau Liberals just do the right thing and scrap Bill C-10? It is dangerous for a governing party to have at its disposal a taxpayer-funded media outlet, which is the CBC, a massive government communications infrastructure with substantial advertising budgets, and hundreds of millions of dollars in subsidies doled out to media companies. Now the Trudeau Liberals want to go one step further and regulate user-generated content online. Trudeau frames it as a law to control foreign-owned web giants like Google, Facebook, and Twitter. But it's not so easy. Former CRTC heads and lawyer Michael Geist have been very vocal. It would harm free speech. Here is Conservative leader Aaron O'Toole challenging Prime Minister Justin Trudeau in the May 5th question period.
Honorable leader of the opposition.
Prime Minister knows this isn't about cultural content. It's about the everyday content that Canadians put on their social media. The Prime Minister last fall mused about placing limits on free speech. He then backtracked and told this House that he would, quote, unequivocally defend freedom of expression, unquote. Will he make good on that promise and withdraw Bill C-10? Or will this broken promise to defend the free speech rights of Canadians just be added to the list of broken promises from this Prime Minister?
Right, Honourable Prime Minister.
Unlike what the Leader of the Opposition is trying to pretend, Bill C-10 isn't about what Canadians do online. It's about what web giants don't do, which is to support Canadian-made stories and music. That's why we made sure the bill covers professional, profitable content while explicitly exempting regular users from contribution requirements. We have and we will continue to improve this bill so it truly reflects its initial objective, which is to serve Canadian creators without hindering free expression in this country.
Will the Trudeau Liberals do the right thing and scrap Bill C-10? They are so focused on calling a snap election, they'll do anything to hang on to power. Like they did when they surprised everyone with the May 6th announcement to build two instead of one polar icebreakers, one in BC and one in Quebec. But that's another story for another day. What do you think? Email Bob at thebreaker.news.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim.
In Apple Daily, Hong Kong police raid newly opened pro-democracy children's wear store. As many as 50 officers cordoned off the storefront of a Cheeky Duck branch in the residential district of Sun Wan. Officers from the police National Security Department were reportedly among them. Owner Herbert Chow said police had a warrant and warned him about stocking any products that could breach the national security law. The store includes a 6-foot-tall sculpture of the Hong Kong Goddess of Democracy and Freedom at the front door, both symbols of the 2019 anti-government protests. In the Taiwan news, Chinese Overwatch gamers cry foul over South Koreans' comments on Taiwan. On April 12th, on the Twitch live streaming service, popular South Korean Overwatch damage per second player Jong Ryul Park, aka Sebyeolbae, expressed his frustration with censorship while using the Chinese streaming platform Douyu. During the video, Park complained that he couldn't say Taiwan and couldn't say Hong Kong. He later apologized on Instagram for saying, quote, inappropriate words. The video was later deleted. 3 weeks later, on May 4th, Chinese Overwatch teams in four cities in China suddenly started criticizing Park on Weibo and threatened to boycott events if he was attending. In ABC News Australia, Uniting Care cyber attack claimed by notorious ransom gang Rival Sodin. Last week, the Queensland healthcare provider fell victim to the cyber attack, which affected its hospitals and aged care homes. A patient last week told the ABC that they knew immediately there was a problem when the Wi-Fi stopped working on April 25th. Then they noticed staff struggling with communication and accessing patient records. The hackers have claimed to have made more than $100 million from their cyber attacks, but confirming ransom accounts and ransom amounts is difficult as victims do not publicize payments. The group apparently has ties to Russia. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast.
Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest.
In the Oregonian, 15-year-old soccer phenom Olivia Moultrie sues for right to compete in National Women's Soccer League. Moultrie, through her father, contends the league's so-called minimum age 18 rule violates antitrust law, harms her development as a soccer player, and delays the likelihood of her being invited to play on the U.S. women's national team or an Olympic team. Moultrie has been practicing with the Portland Thorns of the National Women's Soccer League, plays in unofficial scrimmages and preseason games against other professional teams, and even has her own locker in the Thorns locker room. She competes in the team's developmental academy system. Alfonso Davies of Canada, who has played in at least 30 games this year for Bayern Munich in Germany, is a recent example, having made his debut in Major League Soccer when he was 15 in 2016. In the Seattle Times, public records requests mishandled after Seattle mayor's texts went missing, whistleblower investigation finds. Mayor Jenny Durkin's lawyer engaged in improper governmental action when she decided to exclude Durkin's missing texts from certain requests, violating the State Public Records Act, according to a report on the investigation conducted by an outside expert on behalf of the Seattle Ethics and Elections Commission. The investigation was triggered by a whistleblower complaint filed by a public records officer in the mayor's office. In the Bellingham Herald, WWU joins other Washington universities in making the call on required COVID vaccines. Several public and private universities in Washington state have already said that proof of COVID-19 vaccination would be required for those on campus, including Washington State University and the University of Washington. Fall 2021 classes at Western in Bellingham will be mostly in person with some remote classes. Requests for religious, personal, and medical exemptions will be handled on an individual basis in accordance with WWU's policy on measles vaccination, said WWU President Sabah Randhawa. That's Cascadia Calling on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. Doctors Anthony Fauci, Mike Ryan, and Penny Ballum, they were all speakers on the Genome BC virtual conference last week. The Vancouver-based Life Sciences Research Agency's guest speakers included the White House epidemiologist, the World Health Organization's emergency response head, and the leader of BC's coronavirus immunization program. Each of them pondered the state of the pandemic and the lessons learned. First, Peggy Johnston, a former executive with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, hosted the session with Anthony Fauci.
What would you change? What would you do differently? What would you do better?
Well, first of all, over the years in the United States, we've let our local public health systems languish. We've had so many people who have left the local public health system. And that really interfered greatly with our ability to identify, isolate, and contact trace. Also, we need to get a much more unified approach to a pandemic. You know, there's pandemic preparedness and pandemic responsiveness. We were felt to be, in the United States, the best prepared for a pandemic, and yet we did not fare very well. In fact, the United States, India, and Brazil were the three countries that were hit really very hard. One of the reasons that our response, I believe, was not as good because it was disparate. We're a big country, a great country. We have 50 states and additional territories, and we didn't do things in a unified, coordinated fashion. And some states, when they were supposed to be locking down, as it were, and obeying certain types of clinical guidelines for things like mask wearing, avoiding congregate settings, did not do it very well. And we saw multiple waves in this country, three major waves. And let's hope we're not going to see a fourth wave.
I understand you haven't taken a day off in quite some time. When do you foresee that happening? And what do you think you'll do?
That's a great question, Peggy. It's the truth. I haven't taken a day off in literally 15 months. I hope that when we start getting this under control, that it will be really permanent in the sense of getting the infection rate so low that it's no longer a threat. And when we get the overwhelming proportion of people vaccinated, not that we can take our eye off the ball, but that we could at least take a deep breath and just enjoy a little bit, like interacting with our children and our family, which we haven't been able to do. But the answer to that, Peggy, is something that you've worked on for the most of your career, and that's vaccines. Vaccines are going to get us out of this. We're doing an incredibly good job of implementing the vaccine program now. You know, we have more than a third of the population is fully vaccinated, and more than half of the population, adult population, has received at least one dose. We need to keep that up, and if we do, there is light at the end of the tunnel.
Mike Ryan, the Executive Director of Emergencies for the World Health Organization, gave his update on the pandemic. He said the last 2 weeks have been among the worst of the crisis.
But right now, we're not finished with this pandemic, and it's certainly not finished with us. And we have to stay the course, and we have to fight and reduce and mitigate the impact of this disease and continue in as fast a means as possible to distribute vaccines to those who most need them around the world. It's almost a moment of despair and a moment of great hope at the same time, Tony. I'm in despair for what's happening in places like India and Brazil. And I have huge hopes that if we can accelerate vaccine distribution and we can deal with some of these fundamental issues, we can emerge from the worst of this pandemic. And we can begin to learn the lessons for the future. For me, there are many lessons to learn from this in terms of resilience, in terms of flexibility and our ability to be prepared for the next one. The lesson I've learned is, and I've said this before this pandemic ever began, and Bonnie, you've heard me say this many times, I was always concerned that the least resilience was in the north and the most resilience was in the south in terms of systems. Our complex, highly technological health systems are been inflexible. We've run our health systems on fumes. We've seen health as a cost. We have, you know, previous to the pandemic, 95% occupancy in our hospital beds, and then we expect them to surge. How do you surge health staff that are already understaffed? How do you surge more beds when those beds are already full? Our health systems are not adapted, they're not dynamic, and they're not flexible, and they cannot absorb the punch of a major emergency without serious organization and reorganization. I think we've learned the lesson I said previously about inequity in health will come back and bite you in a crisis, and it has in this case. But I think for me, the fundamental lesson I think I've learned, and one we need to listen to as we prepare for the next, is epidemics begin and end in communities. And I think we've forgotten that. And we need to refocus on how we look at public health, primary healthcare, health services, and health protection as starting in a community from the bottom up. And I hope as we emerge from this pandemic, I was likening it the other day in a conversation to building a suspension bridge. You have to build from both sides and meet in the middle. And I think as we go forward in pandemic preparedness, yes, we will have big global initiatives and they will be needed. We need better global data. We need better development of research and innovation. We need better global financing. All of those global things will be needed. But we're also going to need to build from the bottom up, from communities, with community-based interventions, more community engagement, more community agency and ownership in defining priorities for the future. So I think there's an awful lot to consider going forward. And I think we should have that conversation, and we will begin to have that conversation at the World Health Assembly in a few weeks' time. And we have a number of reports coming through that will look at both the current pandemic response and look at the issues for the future. We just launched a major initiative today with Angela Merkel and Minister Spahn in Germany on a WHO hub in Berlin for data analytics and others, and recognizing the huge role that Canada has played in epidemic intelligence over the years with GFIN and other things. Looking forward to collaboration with Health Canada and with Canadian institutions on that. So we will need to build those initiatives for the future. But I do hope that as we build those technological solutions to our problems, we don't forget that ultimately it is communities that are at the heart of our system, and we need to learn to serve them better. And especially in managing the new world of infodemics and information and trust and mistrust.
Pascal Spotelfer, the CEO of Genome BC, interviewed Penny Bellum, the Vancouver Coastal Health Chair who took over the vaccine rollout in mid-January. Most listeners might know Penny as the former city manager of Vancouver. As the Breaker.News reported, Bellum is on a $220,000 contract, and she hired four former Vancouver 2010 Olympics executives to build the program from scratch. Former VanOck Executive Vice President Terry Wright was among the quartet with $56,000 contracts.
Yeah, so how many people do you have on your team, by the way?
Well, I mean, I have a lot because my team is all the health authorities. But, you know, if I start with the Immunize BC team, we've got a bunch of people in logistics. There's probably, you know, 60 to 70 people across the province who are responsible and at BC CDC for moving the vaccine around, receiving it from the federal government, moving it around, or making sure it gets there direct from, you know, Brussels or wherever it's coming from. And then I have a very small team that I kind of plucked out of my past, a really a remarkable group of people who I worked with on the Olympics when I was at the city. And I asked them to come and help me because, you know, if you think about it, they're experts. Here we had to be able, you know, once we got out of our long-term care facilities, we need to start vaccinating very large numbers of people. And they're experts at, you know, designing venues and models of people flowing through venues and doing different things and, you know, being registered or frisked or tickets taken. And so they have expertise in systems around big events. They have expertise in patient, you know, in flow of people through systems to get things done. And so I've, you know, there's six of them. And they have been really remarkable. And I think friendships and, you know, learnings that we've had from in our health sector from them have, you know, truly been remarkable. Because, you know, if you think about it, we've set up vaccination centers in all around this province that can do, you know, upwards of 15,000 vaccinations a day. And that's not an easy thing to do when you think about it. Most pharmacies, the most they could do is 300 a day. So this is a massive, these are massive organizations. And they also, through their, you know, relationships, which are longstanding with the business sector, which is such an important partner when you're putting on a mass sporting event, we leverage these incredible partnerships with, you know, the airline industry, the cruise ship industry, a lot of the tourism sector, tourism and travel sector, you know, most of whom had been completely laid off over the last year. And so we came together with them and the health authorities to plan these clinics and staff them up using people, you know, in industry who have incredible skill sets in, you know, patient flow or people flow and, you know, safe systems and registration and documentation. It's been a really remarkable partnership, you know, with like WestJet, Air Canada, the Canucks, the convention center, the cruise ship group, like a lot of really remarkable groups that have joined together with us to deliver this.
So if you kind of look at the efforts made so far, what are some of the things you'd say if we would do it all over again, how would we go about that differently? What are some of the key questions learned in your view?
Yeah. Well, for sure, I would get my digital platform ready in advance. And, you know, having this, you know, our platform is based on a Salesforce platform, which, you know, I never heard of Salesforce, but all the Olympians, oh yeah, we know Salesforce. It's terrific. And, you know, and then a Deloitte sort of platform on top of that, and then a different booking platform. So quite a complex digital system, actually. That would be really, really wonderful. And we have to, you know, I would say our logistics people have done a fabulous job, but if we had had to distribute ourselves, because the federal government has really helped us, right? Because our challenge is we have to plan 3 weeks ahead, which is a long time, as you've mentioned, given the changes. So 3 weeks ahead, you say you want so much to go here, so much to go there. And it just looks like a, you know, a bunch of drones heading out over the province. And, you know, I think we will do some more work on our logistics function generally across the health authorities. We have some fabulous people that have been, you know, just up in the middle of the night and doing all kinds of, you know, heroic things to keep the vaccine safe and intact and healthy and moving it around when necessary in our very big province, eh? Like it's a, yeah. You know, it's not the lower mainland. It's like miles and miles of northern terrain or mountain passes. So like that's another area where we know we have some work. We just haven't had time, you know, to do much, but continue to build that airplane. You know, we now, as a result of this, have, you know, quite an array of minus 70 freezers that are strategically placed all around. So we built a lot of infrastructure with a lot of help from our federal colleagues. They've been really quite terrific in assisting us with whatever we need. So then, you know, and we've, you know, we have all these legacies. We've trained so many different disciplines to immunize. So we now have a legacy of, you know, a whole bunch of groups that can be scaled up and mobilized quite quickly just to put into a clinic. We have a model that's designed that we will continue to evolve, but it has been terrific. I think the biggest challenge we would have, Pascal, is that we've accessed a whole lot of facilities like convention centers and, you know, sporting facilities. If you think about where all these clinics are, that would otherwise be in use.
Yeah.
And, you know, the big thing that people forget about a pandemic is it is the human resource issue, is that you lose people, right? They're isolated or they're sick, or they're looking after people who are isolated or sick. And that is, you know, when you do a pandemic plan, it's like, how do you have business continuity with the HR impact? But, you know, because so many people were laid off and things were working in a sector that has big facilities, we had lots of places to have our clinics. But, you know, we would have to be able to mobilize, you know, a pretty wide array of, you know, pop-up facilities like these army tents and stuff that, you know, people make. So that's another thing. And, you know, I just think that there's a lot of different scenarios. And as you say, artificial intelligence, that we could plan ahead and start to build some infrastructure that would help us in decision making that we had to learn, you know, how to do that. You know, Excel and Zoom have made a lot of money off us in this pandemic. And PowerPoint, I guess. But yeah, so I think we'll have more legacies than kind of big challenges. We've learned a massive amount.
That was Penny Ballum, Mike Ryan, and Anthony Fauci on the Genome BC virtual conference, May 4th to 6th. For more information about Genome BC, go to genomebc.ca.
Spruce Hill Contracting.
Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to people making a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to nurses, the foot soldiers in the fight against coronavirus. It is Nurses Week in BC from May 10th to 16th. Thank you for your service and thank you for your care. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. Spruce Hill Contracting, custom homes and renovations. Find more information at sprucehill.ca.
So I'm very happy that I'm going to get my Moderna shot today. And I wanted to tell everybody, I think you should get out there and do it too. I even changed one of my songs to fit the occasion. It goes, vaccine, 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 vaccine. I'm begging of you, please don't hesitate. Vaccine, 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 vaccine. Because once you're dead, then that's a bit too late. I know I'm trying to be funny now, but I'm dead serious about the vaccine. I think we all want to get back to normal, whatever that is, and that would be a great shot in the arm, wouldn't it?
Those are the sounds of country music legend and actress Dolly Parton on Twitter. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of May 9th, 2021. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on May 9th in 1992, the Kura Resources Westray mine disaster in Plymouth, Nova Scotia? It killed 26 workers. Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's PATREON.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.